So, Porky, here we are once more.
Certainly we are.
In the very plush Audio Boom Studios.
It's very nice to be here.
Just a stone's throw from Buckingham Palace,
yes.
Some people would say.
Now,
we haven't got an Ask Porky for a while, so we're going to do one today.
Good, I'm
obviously
delighted.
Obviously, everybody knows that we are in the midst of a World Cup.
I want to guide my flock.
Yeah, well, a lot of people have got a lot of questions for you.
Okay.
Some of them are football-related.
Okay.
And so it's not really a World Cup Ask Porky, but there will be some football-related questions in it.
Well, the World Cup is the most important issue taking part in the world at the moment, on the globe, on planet Earth.
Uh-huh.
Therefore, it has to be relevant to what we're talking about.
Well, exactly right.
Yeah.
So let's kick off with a non-football question.
Okay, sure.
Ben has tweeted to the two mics. Does Porky have any advice for someone that wants to lose weight but also wants to indulge in bladderation, not in moderation?
Well, what you should do is keep yourself fit. Now, if you want to be a regular imbiber, there's nothing wrong with that, believe me, you know, 3 or 4 pints a day, most doctors would say, oh, you shouldn't be getting into that.
Three or four pints a day?
Well, if you want to, twice a week, I should hasten to add, not throughout the week, okay? That's okay, but of course, do it the way I have always done it, and that is walk 3 miles to your pub before you have your couple of pints, all right?
Yes.
Walk 3 miles back, then have a pint nearer home, then go home, okay?
Yes.
And that's the way to do it. Be very careful, by the way.
In this heat, that's a bit difficult, isn't it?
In this heat, it is difficult, except for the fact that you can handle the heat if you wear clothes for the heat. So if you're walking across the North Downs 3 miles to your pub, shorts and trainers and a loose short sleeve top are excellent for doing that. And another bit of advice I've got for you, if you're doing that, is wear an item of clothing on the top half of your body which doesn't show sweat stains. Because unfortunately, that happens. You perspire a lot when you walk.
You do.
And it's not nice if you're wearing a dark shirt.
What's your best colour for that?
The best colour is white.
Is it?
Yes, it is white, okay? Because that's colour of salt, all right?
Okay. Or you could just, you know, cover yourself in water and nobody would notice.
Well, you could do that. Yeah. I did that once in a nightclub when I was younger.
Yeah.
What happened was, I was in pursuit of a lot of drink and a lot of female company.
Really?
What happened was a mate of mine who was not as able to take his drink as well as I did, he sort of came up to me, confided in me. As he leaned into my chest, I'm afraid he vomited.
Oh,
so,
what
I know.
A terrible story.
I know, it's shocking. It's shocking. So,
the Chester Chunderer.
The Chester Chunderer. So I knew that this was going to cause me terrible problems with the young lady
I had lined up.
So I said...
How unpleasant.
Yeah, so I had him thrown out. I mean, even though it was my mate, I thought,
that's
well...
Nice of you.
But I thought, you know, for his own benefit, because so I threw him away. I'd managed to move out the way before the majority of the volume of his chundering would happen. But nevertheless, that's not a shirt you want to go back and see your girlfriend
with. Not really.
So I went into the gentleman's loo. I took the shirt off. I literally rinsed it and soaked it in a bowl full of water and squeezed it out and I put it back on. And then I came out and I said to my young lady,
was
you won't believe
steam
it.
Coming off it?
No, no, because I did it in cold water, believe it or not.
No, I mean, when you put it back onto your hot body, would it not produce
steam? Well,
not steam?
Really, not really, because
really?
It was quite a well-air-conditioned building, even though it was a disco, and I was disco king in those days, you know.
Okay.
But seriously, I went back and said to my lady, I said, look, I'm so terribly sorry. I said, but as I was coming back to see you, a drunk tripped and spilt a pint of Guinness over me.
Uh-huh.
I didn't think she'd want to know that somebody had vomited on me. You
I don't
know
think
what I mean?
So, no.
Yeah. And I said, in due deference to the fact that I want you to believe that I'm a gentleman, I didn't want you then to be sitting next to a mamsie, you know, I've gone and washed my shirt. Is that okay? She loved it.
Did she?
She thought it was brilliant.
Did she get laid that night then?
Sorry?
Did she get laid
Well,
that
I'm
night?
Not going into that. You see, that, you know, that's you being basic again, and I believe in romance.
Do you mind not spending 20 minutes on the first question?
I believe in romance.
Okay, the second question is football related.
Right.
How far does Porky think England will go? This is from Josh. In the World Cup, after seeing their performance against Panama.
Could go all the way. This is what I'm saying, because Germany have struggled, Argentina have struggled, Brazil have struggled. The only teams not struggling at the moment are the two teams who are meeting each other tonight, which is England and Belgium.
The Belgique.
And the Belgicos. But if we believe all that we're told by Roberto, you know, Martinez, he's going to rest some of his players, who he says have twinges and injuries, except the players, of course, are revolting and saying, we don't want to be resting. So it's a clash of the Titans tonight. A bit like the sort of stuff you and I do on the radio.
Indeed.
I say
Except England... I don't do Clash of the Titans.
What?
Except I don't do Clash of the Titans.
No, you didn't used to work on Sundays, did you?
No.
Until recently.
No, I didn't.
And I can say to you this. They're both going through to the next rounds. That's going to be a mathematical equation about who gets who.
Yeah.
We might get Colombia. Colombia are a good team. They've had a good World Cup so far, but we'll get past them. I am 9-1 England now to win the World Cup.
Have you put money on them?
Down from 20-1.
Yeah, have you put money on?
No, I haven't yet. No. Down from 20-1 at the start of the competition.
Yeah.
And I have to say, that with a bit of fervour and old Gareth Southgate, as we now call
Pep.
Him, we call him Gareth.
I call him Pep.
We call
still.
Him Gareth.
Yeah.
We have every chance.
Okay. Here's another football-related question from Stuart. Love you both dearly. My question, do you favour the Fashanu skin-tight shorts era or the baggy Beckham 2002? At least with Fash, you knew what you were getting.
Well, to be honest, I prefer looser shorts rather than tight shorts.
The Beckham era shorts were too big, though, weren't they?
Well, the Beckham era shorts were a bit too big, I agree. Duncan Ferguson was a very big man wearing baggy shorts,
yes.
And that's a perfect sort of compromise, if you see what I mean. You know what I mean? But if you get a little fella, you know, get a little footballer, about 5'7" or something like that, wearing those big baggy shorts, looks quite ridiculous. Do you remember Alex James, you know,
you
being a Scotsman and all that? Will have been a hero of your father's and all that. Alex James, who played for Arsenal, he had the longest shorts in the history of football. They came down below his knees. Because he wasn't...
I remember the good old days when sometimes in the winter... goalkeepers would come out with tracksuit bottoms on.
Oh, yeah, they would, yeah. But that was in the days when the pitches were so bad.
They were so frozen.
Well, exactly. There's no under soil heating, and a goalkeeper could catch his legs. But the other one is, I a good friend of mine is Andy Townsend. We talk about him a lot. Andy, a great guy, very successful footballer, captain of Ireland. And when Andy was captain of Chelsea and Aston Villa... the shorts were too small. They were too ridiculously tight.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he said they were quite unpleasant to wear because they weren't big enough. But the guy who we always loved as a kid, when I was an Everton fan, who used to stand on Gladys Street, we used to love Huddersfield coming to town.
Yes.
Because Frank Worthington, who regarded himself as a playboy,
bit of a playboy,
long hair and all that, he deliberately rolled up the edges of his white shorts to expose his sort of genitalia.
Massive genitalia.
Yeah. So, you know, that's another take on the shorts.
Well, indeed. How about this from Sam? He says, Porky, do you believe in life after death? And if so, what would you like to be reincarnated as?
I believe something must happen when you die. Because where did we come from?
Yeah.
And where did we go to?
Ashes to ashes.
Ashes to ashes, dust to dust, yeah. And all my life, I vowed not to kill anybody because I believe I would then suffer damnation.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. What do you think? What goes around comes around?
What goes around? No, I think you're banished from the kingdom of God if you go around killing people. No, I do. I'm serious.
Well, okay.
When I see the
Sopranos.
What about
being horrible to someone, though?
No. Being horrible to somebody, in my view, is a Christian way of getting things straight.
I see.
I've never maliciously, you know, lashed out at anybody or anything like that, just out of spite. I've always done it to try and get things right. When I watch The Sopranos and I see these guys just willy-nilly picking up guns and blowing people away, you know, when I see Peaky Blinders and the ease with which they take somebody's life, I'm appalled. The worst job in the world for me would be, you know, sometimes in a totalitarian state like Russia or the old Russia, like Korea now, if I was selected as a hitman, I wouldn't be very good at it.
You wouldn't be.
I wouldn't want to kill anybody.
No. Well, that's not much point in being a hitman then. Here's one from James. He says, I'm thinking of emigrating to Australia, which is clearly a life-changing decision. How do you choose between leaving family behind and providing a better life for your children elsewhere? And also, is there anywhere that Porky would emigrate to?
The only place I want to emigrate to is Northumberland, which I've made clear many, many times.
Well, you can't really emigrate to Northumberland.
Well, I'd like to emigrate to Northumberland on a day like today, because we're in the middle of the hottest spell of this summer.
It's still pretty hot in Northumberland.
It is, but at least in Northumberland, with my cottage on the beach, you'd have the... When I go down to Gosport, the one great thing is you get the wind coming in off Portsmouth Harbour, and it's very refreshing sitting out on the balcony and not being in the glare of the sun.
Uh-huh.
It's great, you know, no problem
Scirocco.
At all. What?
A Scirocco.
Scirocco.
A Scirocco is a warm wind that comes.
No, it's not even a warm wind. It's quite a pleasant wind.
Well,
I don't like
this
Scirocco.
Time of year, it'll be warm.
No, it's quite. But anyway, look, what I'm saying is, I would not emigrate to another country. Do you know why?
Why?
I couldn't, and this used to worry me when you and I lived and worked in America.
No.
I couldn't bear dying on foreign soil and then being shipped home in a.
Maybe you wouldn't be shipped home. You could be cremated there. Somebody could carry the urn back.
Well, this is what happened. One time we were in the. excuse me.
You're all right.
Excuse me, a bit of hay fever.
You can pause for some water if you
wish. No, I'm fine. I'll just have a sip of some warm liquor for the back of my throat.
Yes,
hang
do
on.
That, yes. Mm. The hay fever is bad this year.
That's good.
But there shouldn't be any hay fever in the studio, though, to be honest.
Well, they get everywhere, these spores.
Mm.
Anyway, let me tell you.
Yeah.
There we are one night in the Daily Express Bureau in the news building on 42nd Street.
Yes.
And a package arrives.
Oh, yeah.
And it had to go in the overnight back to London.
Yes.
Because to speed things up, if we had some photographic prints, if we had some large volumes of copy that we didn't want to send, you know, it wasn't electronically.
Or they had to get something in their hands.
Something in their hands, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
We had the overnight bag, you know, for legal documents to be signed, to buy up stuff and all that kind of stuff.
Mm.
This package arrived, so what's that? Well, they said, that's Harry. I said, what do you mean? And apparently some bloke who'd worked for the Daily Express for maybe 10 years in the bureau in the 60s, had died and requested that his ashes be sent back to England to his relatives. Right. And they sent it into the office and said, can you put them in the overnight bag?
Blimey.
It's not very dignified.
It's not very dignified at all, is it? I wonder what you'd tell customs that was.
Yeah.
For heaven's sake.
Yeah.
Here's one from John, who says, Porky, what would you do with a 21-year-old son that isn't reaching his full potential due to his lackadaisical attitude?
I'd be quite harsh about that because, funny enough, in a podcast not very soon, I want to discuss students and student life with you, okay? Because students are going to have a bit of a shock when it comes to the next academic year because they're going to revise their timetables each day. Mm. But if I had a 21-year-old son who wasn't up to it, I would not get angry.
Mm.
I would not start trying to bully him. I would not start trying to make him live his life like I did.
Yes.
I would remind him that the earlier you start making progress in life, the sooner you will bear the fruits of life, okay?
Right.
And as far as I'm concerned, I started on life's path towards trying to make myself comfortable as early as possible.
Well, you started when you were in your single figures, five or six, collecting Krugerrands.
I wasn't five or six when I collected those. No, I'm saying for actively getting out there, I think I was 12 when I had my first paper round. And I loved getting up early in the morning and getting out there and delivering papers and actually contributing something to the way of life and earning lots of dough.
Yes. Well, you don't have that much money doing a paper round.
Well, but you do relatively to your friends. Well, you can afford more chocolate bars when you've got, you know, a £1.50 a day for delivering papers. So my answer to that one is, don't let your son of 21 slide into a comfortable life just because he's living off the bank of mum and dad.
Exactly right. Mark says, in your quest to find a suitable future, Mrs. Parry, have you ever considered a saga cruise, as there's no doubt an abundance of wealthy widows sailing the seas looking for love?
Last place I'd go to look for the first Mrs. Parry. The first Mrs. Parry vacancy is now gone. That is never going to happen. But let me tell you this. When I was on the QE2, that was the old boat which...
Well, it was the transatlantic boat of note, wasn't it?
It was. It was launched in about 1967. I remember at the King's School Chester, all lessons stopped while we watched the launch of the QE2.
Yes.
Because its home port was Liverpool, because Cunard were then based in Liverpool, OK?
Yeah.
So we were all told, right, lessons stopped, chap. Let's go over to Belfast, Holland and Wolff, launching the QE2.
Yeah.
It was the most magnificent boat. Now, how would I know 30 years later? I was actually on that boat, careering across the Atlantic, right? But the point is, you're absolutely right, it was full of what they called blue rinses.
Yes.
These were ladies from New York, Florida, East Coast East Coast seaboard.
Widows.
Well, some of them were. Some of them were widows. Some of them were divorcees. Some of them were actually looking for a bit of excitement on the side, all this kind of stuff. Yeah. But, I mean, they were pitiful to look at, you know? No, they were pitiful. And,
That's a bit unkind. Not very gentlemanly of you.
No, I'm not being ungentlemanly.
You mean they were too old or
Well,
too
some
ugly?
Of them were in, like, the 70s, 80s. It was quite ridiculous. They had nothing better to do, but they'd been left a lot of money by their rich American husbands, you know?
Right.
And what I said to the captain, I was on the captain's table one night, I said, isn't it amazing that, you know, they choose to, you know, take the... Because they took the trip both ways. They went from New York to Southampton.
Yeah.
They stayed in Southampton for a couple of days or somewhere in the New Forest or something like that. They go back and they come back. So I said, isn't it amazing that in those 2 weeks, you know, because they're of a certain age, they don't actually kick the bucket and snuff it? And he said, oh, no, some of them do. I said, what? He said, we have
so
a mortuary.
A return package.
No, he said, we have a mortuary on board. He said, we have to.
Yeah.
We have so many elderly passengers.
Right. Blimey. Here's one from Bath Hibby. He says, if Brexit meant house prices would plummet, would Porky be in favour of a second referendum?
I'm of the opinion that the Remainers are now getting so desperate because it looks like Brexit's going to happen.
Yes.
That they're ringing up all their mates in commerce, in business, in industry, and saying, could you put out a scare story saying everything's going to go, you know, completely
Like the one
up.
From Airbus.
Yeah, that's right, if Brexit happens. Airbus, incidentally, is half-owned by the French anyway.
Yeah,
he wants to stay there.
Right.
Isn't that a funny thing? So I'll have to close all these
shops
down in Britain.
They've also had a load of illegal sort of subsidies from the EU.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. $220 million in euros in subsidies from the EU and all. And at the end of the day, if you're looking at common sense-wise, the reason why the wings are built in a place called Broughton, just outside Chester, just in North Wales, is because they have the skills there, the engineers, to build those wings. So if they're going to close that down, are they going to then export all the engineers who build them back to somewhere else,
well, exactly.
like China
and
France or something?
And they also build wings and parts of planes for other planes as well as
Airbus. Of course they do.
In fact, they build, apparently, some stuff for Boeing.
Of course they do.
That's how clever they are.
Of course they do. Of course they do. So to my mind, property is not going to collapse under Brexit or anybody else, because the basic equation with property is there are a lot of people in this country who need homes and there is not enough property. Bingo. Thank you very much. As an investment, you're on a winner.
Indeed. Dean says this, Porky, who can handle a mass bladderation session better, Mr. Brazil or old MG? I think there's only one answer to that.
Well, yeah, there is only one answer to that, but I have never seen a man be able to socialise on such an extensive basis over a long period of time as Alan Brazil, and I don't think anybody else has.
No,
it's funny enough that I was. Funny, it's a good story. I was talking to Al the other day. Al and I had done the show, the warm-up show on Talk Sport, and we were sitting there, and for some unknown reason, the name Mike Dickin came up.
Oh, yeah.
Now Mike Dickin was a legendary Talk Sport presenter who did the mid-morning show, which you and I took over, of course, you know, and Mike Dickin, for some mad reason, one time, you know, accused Al of being an amateur drinker.
Really?
Well, Dickin was a Cornishman.
Right.
And so he said, you know, you're on a cider. And he said, Brazil, he said, you can come down to my place on Bodmin Moor anytime you like, and I'll drink you under the fucking table, okay? And Al said, where do we need to go to Bodmin Moor?
Yeah.
Hey, where do we need Bodmin Moor?
Yeah, he doesn't like
what time
far.
You finish your show, son? What time you finish your show? And Dickin said, 1 o'clock. He says, right. I'll see you. Butter Market, 1 o'clock, okay? Yeah. By 6 o'clock, Mr. Dickin was being carried out on a stretcher.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah. And Mr. Brazil would have already been drinking for 3 hours before he got there.
Absolutely. Presumably. Warming up.
Yeah.
Warming up.
He's an incredible bloke.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
One more, just before we take a little stop.
Okay.
From Wrong Star. At what stage will the Porky Jukes kick in for England? I'd like to get on with my life, but while England is still in the World Cup, I'm strangely compelled to watch every game. Found myself watching Serbia-Switzerland on catch-up the other day.
Yeah.
I can't sleep.
Yeah.
So I think he's hoping for England to get knocked out.
Well, no, I don't think so. I think if England are doing well, we're all excited about the competition. And the reason we watch other games is to find out, you know, the opponents we might possibly make further on. Ronaldo is still the most fascinating player in the competition.
Yeah.
Well, Ronaldo and Messi. Ronaldo because he's so good, and Messi because he's not performing.
Yes.
But Ronaldo missed a penalty this week, and that caused him great strife.
Yes.
And he put the elbow into the face of one of his opponents.
He was lucky not to get sent off,
wasn't he? Was so lucky. Any other player would have got sent off.
Yeah.
But you could see the referee thinking, hang on, this will completely fuck this competition if I send Ronaldo off, because he can't play in the next two games.
Right.
I don't think I'm big enough to do that, so he didn't.
Because it's a massive call.
Oh, it's a massive call. Yeah. He's the captain of the last international team to win a trophy in the European Championships.
Yeah.
He could be the captain of the World Cup winners.
Yeah, although incredibly, that game I was watching the other night, I mean, within a whisker, and I tweeted out about this, Iran could have been going through instead of Portugal.
It was unbelievable.
I mean, that guy had an open goal, practically,
he had an open
goal, and he kind of skewered it left.
At the far post.
Yeah.
And even when it hit the side netting, it rippled.
It looked like
I thought it had gone in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if Iran had gone through?
Amazing.
And then your kind of argument about all these crappy teams shouldn't be allowed in it would have been blown out of the water.
Oh, but it wasn't, was it?
Well, no.
Because they didn't go through, did they?
Saudi Arabia did well. They came third. Back to your search for the new, or the first Mrs. Parry from Russell.
Portmaster,
would you ever consider entering Love Island to aid in the search for the first Mrs. Parry?
Well,
have you ever seen it?
Well, no, I haven't.
It's so bad.
No. Unless Love Island, like middle age, you know, entering early middle age as I am now, it would be preposterous for me to get involved there. Oh, look, everybody who's in Love Island is a very attractive human being, okay? And as I'm heterosexual, the girls obviously look lovely.
Yes.
But you'd feel like a bit of an old perv ogling and lusting after
you
them
would.
Because, of course, you know, they're 40 years away from me, so to speak.
Indeed.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And so I don't watch
Unless they did a Love Island for old gits like us.
Well, that's what I said. If they did an early middle-aged Love Island, then, you know, maybe. But that wouldn't be very attractive. Nobody would watch that.
Well, they might do.
Bodily shapes change enormously in early middle age,
maybe
believe me.
Well, maybe you'd have to not sit around in chewing trunks. You just sit around in a house.
Well, maybe. But anyway, the answer to it is I don't understand the way young people think and talk these days. I'm sure it must have been a put-up job when half of them said they didn't know what Brexit was and didn't understand what everybody was getting upset about and all that. Do they actually eject people from Love Island?
They do. They get thrown out.
So
it's
a bit like the old, what's the other one?
It's like Celebrity Big Brother.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't really understand how it works, but I think... Yeah. They get ejected once they've either broken off with somebody or they've been rejected by that person.
Why? Are they paired up at the start of
Love Island? Paired up at the start,
Oh, I see. I didn't realize the idea is that
they're supposed to try and stay together all the way through.
Yeah.
But they have various temptations thrown in front of them. Like, you know, if you're a bloke and you're teamed up with one particular woman, they'll bring in some new woman.
But I think that's disgusting.
Well, it's
because that's tempting people to live a life then of the alley cat lifestyle,
exactly,
which you've pursued for a lot of your life.
I have not pursued that at all.
Yeah.
It has pursued me.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, John says this: my wife and I are honeymooning in Vegas and San Francisco next month. Do you have any recommendations other than bladder in mono and rogerization sessions?
What I would suggest is spend more time in San Francisco and less in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Vegas is brilliant for about 2 days, in my view.
Yes.
I mean, we've both been there, Mike. But it's big, it's glitzy. Welcome to the fabulous Las Vegas Strip and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And all these, you know, really weird sort of hotels, the pyramid and all that kind of stuff. The circus.
Right.
Is the circus still going?
Well,
I don't think it is it?
It's so long. I've only been to Vegas once, and I went in the for that Barry McGuigan fight,
that
he lost, which was around about, I don't know, 89, 90 around then.
Yeah.
It's changed so dramatically since then.
When I first...
I think the biggest hotel there at the time was Caesar's Palace.
It was.
And that was where the fight took place in the car park.
It was, in the car park.
But
yeah.
all of the Steve Wynn's place and the, you know, the...
Absolutely.
What do you call it, the Hard Rock place, they're all new. I mean, I hadn't been into any of them.
I first went there in about 81.
Yeah.
And you could walk from one end of the strip to the other.
Yeah.
Because it was just a plonked out in the middle of the desert.
Right.
The strip is now like 13 miles
massive,
long.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable, you know. But you're absolutely right. Caesar's Palace is the place. And do you know what? We stayed in a Holiday Inn hotel opposite Caesar's Palace.
Mm.
Very nice.
Yeah.
You had a huge, you know, bed about 8 foot wide, all that kind of, very American and all that. But these days, Las Vegas is too loud.
Mm.
Now, if, like me, sometimes you think, oh, away from the maddening crowd, I'm going to find a quiet restaurant in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
I'm going to take a couple of English newspapers with me and sit down, a bit of chat.
Mm.
You can't do that in Las Vegas.
No.
There is nowhere in Las Vegas which is quiet. Nowhere.
Right.
Like, you cannot get it, okay?
Except for a hotel room, I suppose.
No, well, even then, you know, the buzz from the streets is with you all the time. So I would say do 1.5 days in Las Vegas, which is Nevada, and then drive. It's a spectacular drive to Frisco.
It's a long way to Frisco, isn't
it? It's a hell of a long way, but it's a worthwhile drive, seriously. And you'll enjoy Frisco enormously.
Patrick says, would Porky ever consider donating his body to medical research? What with all his conditions, it's a miracle he's still breathing.
Well, I was asked a question earlier on in this particular broadcast about is there life after death?
Yes.
I don't know whether you need your bits and pieces to go on to the next world,
sir.
I'm not sure about it.
Yeah.
I know that your soul is within your body and that the, you know, the flesh and the bones and all that kind of stuff, you know, withers and dies.
Yeah.
Eh? But I mean, do you know the other problem I've got about, you know, when you say is there something else after you die?
Yeah.
Supposing there is, like, you know, the afterlife and all that.
Heaven and hell.
Yeah, supposing you get there and there's some horrible twat who you didn't like when you were on Earth who wants to see you.
Mm.
How do you tell him to push up?
Well, that's the problem.
Yeah.
He might be able to hang around forever, haunting you like some kind of bad
smell. That's what
smell.
I mean. That's what I mean.
Dreadful.
Yeah.
Mark says, I currently work opposite the King's School, Chester, and drive past the sports fields on a daily basis. Mm. I can't help but envisage a young red-headed general running the midfield with an iron rod.
Yes,
what would
right.
you say was your greatest sporting achievement ever in your days at King's?
Well, it was winning the heavyweight championship fight for charity against a guy called Martin Hazel. He was about... I was... In those days, I was 5 foot... Eight. I hadn't actually grown to 5 foot eight and three quarters.
Oh, I see.
He was
going to say, I thought you were still 5 foot eight.
No, no. He was 6 foot two or three, and he thought he was going to wallop me, but I got in underneath his long reach and bashed the hell out of him and knocked him out of the ring.
Right.
So that was probably my greatest one. However, funny enough, only the other day I came across a King's School Chester yearbook because I went to visit the school to prepare for a lecture I'm giving there in the autumn.
Okay.
Okay?
Right. What are you lecturing on?
Life and experience and careers and what you have to do to get on in life.
Yes.
And in fact, the chap there who is the teacher who looks after careers and all that kind of stuff produced the yearbook magazine from the year I was there, which had a picture of the first 11 with me in it and a tribute from the captain underneath, which said, we had a great season, and I don't want to, you know, single out individuals, but Mike Parry deserves a mention for being the only player who played in every game this season and ran more miles than the rest of the team put together. I truly was the midfield general.
That must have endeared you to the rest of the team. Why would they single you out?
Well, because I was... I tried harder.
No, the rest of the
You've got to try so hard in life that you win. If you're not winning, it's because you're not trying hard enough.
Okay, well, that doesn't say much for Everton, does it? Jonathan says, it's Porky. What do you think of John Stones these days? You haven't been his biggest fan in the last couple of years.
John Stones has come on enormously.
Yeah.
I think that Gareth Southgate might have, you know, actually identified a role for him in the England team. And, of course, he scored two goals. Two goals. Not bad, is it, for an England centre-half?
His first goal was great.
His first goal was brilliant because it was he positioned himself properly, got in, bang. His second one was fortuitous, but he was in the right place at the right time. And John Stones, well, every England player, it's fair to say, every England player playing out there in Russia will have enhanced his reputation by the time they get back.
Well, so far,
and,
so good.
And I tell you what, what's bloody interesting, right? Some players who may have been on the move before they went, the club should have done the deal because they're going to be worth another 25 million quid by the time they get back.
That may well be true. Luke says, what is your favourite holiday resort in the UK?
In the UK?
Yeah.
If I was said...
Llandudno?
No, not Llandudno. Now, somebody said to me now, right, Mike, you can have a week, because I'd never go away for more than a week.
Yeah.
In the United Kingdom, where do you want to go? I would go, quite seriously... to a very lovely hotel in Torquay.
In Torquay?
Torquay.
40 Towers of land.
Yes.
Lewis says, Porky, who will inherit your substantial estate when you go to Porky Hell? Will it be A, Bill Kenwright, B, Wetherspoons, or C, Gosport Council?
Well, Mr. Kenwright doesn't need it because he did a brilliant deal buying and passing Everton on to the new owners. And he deserves every single penny of whatever he's made because he put his life on the line for Everton. He was also a very wealthy man anyway because he runs a great theatre business. The second lot you said, Wetherspoons, well, we met Tim Martin not so long ago.
Indeed.
And Tim Martin is a man of very, very substantial means because he's a brilliant businessman. As of Gosport Borough Council, no need to give them money. They take money off the taxpayer, and as long as they spend it wisely, they can get on with it. But I would never put money into public services that's been earned from the private sector because it's unnecessary.
Indeed. James says this. What's the latest on the mugging?
Well, I don't want to get into that, but I'll tell you what I did see today, which I thought was blinking brilliant. In Manchester, a group of... what do we call them? Not motorbike muggers, moped muggers, right, were proceeding to a crime. And the reason that the police figured these guys are muggers is because the giveaway is two young men on one moped, OK?
Yes, that's right.
There's no reason for that unless they're up to no good.
Yeah.
It was revealed after pictures were shown of the apprehension of these bums, these wankers, right?
Yes, they are.
These
that's
horrible
exactly what
people,
they are.
Yeah. That the police in Manchester have got a squad of seven unidentified moped riders who are undercover policemen.
And they're on those little kind of mountain bikes.
Well, they're not actually. They're just on mopeds similar to the ones that the guys were riding. When they realised that they'd spotted them, they circled them, brought them down, arrested them all and took them in and found that they were responsible for earlier thefts. Now, that's the way. That's the way to get into the moped crime epidemic, which is hitting this country. Well done to the Greater Manchester Police.
Spencer says, if you were given the choice of 20 years more life with no more alcohol ever again or 10 years with Bladder in Modo, which would you choose?
10 years with Bladder in Modo.
Yeah.
Because although I'm not an alcoholic or anything like that, I do believe a drink makes the world go round. And funny enough, George Best, who ended his life living very close to me in Stockbroker Belt, Surrey, right? And life, you know, his life sadly ended far too young. But he met Jimmy Greaves after George Best had his liver transplant. He met Jimmy Greaves, and they were both working on a charity to help people who'd had drink problems and then medical problems. Okay.
Yes.
And afterwards, Jimmy Greaves revealed that George Best had said, "I asked the doctor, what would happen if I took another drink." And he had a beautiful Irish accent, George Best, by the way, which I can't imitate. But Jim Reeves said, "Well, I hope you didn't, George. I hope under no circumstances will that ever happen." And George Best said, "You know what he said to me, Jimmy? He said, George, if you take another drink right now, he says, you'll be dead within 5 years. Do you know what, Jimmy? I'd take that. That's what he said.
Indeed. Yeah. I'm sure he would.
Yeah.
Here's one from Luke again, which is about football. What are your views on VAR?
Well, VAR was held to utter ridicule in the Portugal-Iran game, wasn't
it? Yeah, it was.
Because it was used three times in about 20 minutes
right.
when a referee ran to the side, had a look at the screen himself.
He went round, I've never seen that before. He went round the back to actually look into the screen.
Yeah, he did, yeah, yeah.
Madness.
Yeah, and made wrong decisions. Mm. He should have sent Ronaldo off. It wasn't a penalty when it was, or was when it wasn't. I can't quite remember now.
Yes.
And in fact, everybody universally in the football world has said, scrap VAR, it causes more problems than it solves.
Yeah.
And anyway, part of the great, you know, mystery of football, part of the great attraction, is the debate over the human decision factor right. in a split second.
But the problem is, though, as much as you can put the blame onto the VAR, actually, it's the referee who's seen a VAR and deciding whether or not to do anything.
Absolutely.
So
but
the referees
at the end of the
are
day,
still screwing it up, aren't
they? At the end of the day, cameras don't solve everything. If there's a mass of bodies, which there always are in a football situation, sometimes the camera simply hasn't got the right angle and you can't tell. And again, it's down to the human decision factor, which could be right or could be wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
So why is VAR necessary? It's not.
So you're saying you don't want it?
I don't want it. I just scrap it. It's
okay.
hopeless.
One from Neil for this weather. How can I keep my pets cool in this heat?
Mm. Keeping pets cool is essential in this heat.
Yes.
First of all, we know that we don't keep dogs in cars and all that kind
yes.
of stuff. Right.
Thankfully.
But I was watching a piece which was being hosted by Piers Morgan only this morning. And they went out, you know, outside of the studios, obviously. And apparently, if you have got a dog, the best thing you can do, and you must probably know this yourself, is get a paddling pool and just let the dog flap around in it. And
they can't have enough
cool.
water, it's good, yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Chuck water over them. Just don't, also, don't let them out in the sunshine too much.
Down in the sunshine. Put a hat on them, I'm told, which is quite
a good
idea.
A hat,
if
you
can, absolutely.
That's not a bad thing. Bren says, if you could remove anything from your history, what would it be?
If I could remove anything from my history?
Yes.
I'm not really ashamed of any of my history. I've behaved improperly sometimes whilst bladderated in situations and circumstances which, you know, you'd like to repair. But basically, if you go through life with regrets and saying, shouldn't have done this, shouldn't have done all that, well, everybody has regrets, some to the greater extent than others. For instance, you know, I think to myself sometimes, well, was that the right decision? Would the career have gone better if I'd taken that decision? Should I have turned left there or right there? And then I think of people like Michael Barrymore, right, who got involved in, you know, incredibly bad decisions, which wrecked careers, you know? And you
it's
say,
a judgment call for a lot of
it's
people.
It's a judgment call. You say to yourself, well, I didn't get it that wrong, you know, I still have a comfortable life, I'm able to live in two or three properties, I'm able to help out my family, not they need it, able to help out my friends. Je ne regrette rien.
Okay, as was famously once said by Norman Lamont, I think, wasn't it? And indeed, that woman who sang Je ne regrette
Edith
rien.
Edith Piaf.
Neil says, family and good health aside, what are the three most important things in Porky's life? And he says, I'm assuming family and good health would be the two most important ones for everyone, even Porky. So put those to one side. Health and good health and family.
Yes.
What are the three other most important things in your life?
Well, I'm not sure if there are three other most important things. Everton are important to me because I have an inner feeling about them. I, you know, love having supported them all my life and I love them to do well. It brings me a warm feeling when I'm watching Everton and they're winning. So that's very good. Secondly, I love my country very much. I love Great Britain, United Kingdom. I love living here.
Yes.
And you know what? I sometimes regret that you and I have spent such a long of our lives going around the world, and you in particular living in America.
Yes.
Have I seen enough of my own country? I don't think I have. I'd love to see a lot more of Scotland.
There's parts of it you haven't maybe been to.
Well,
you did just say je ne regrette rien, so you don't want to say now regret.
No, I'm not regretting it. What I'm saying is, you know, if I thought about it, I'd like to see a lot more of Scotland. The Lake I've hardly ever been to the Lake District,
really?
And I grew up in Chester.
Yeah, the Lake District's lovely.
Yeah, I know. And,
Lake Coniston.
A bit more of East Anglia. Mr. Brazil's recommended I should get a boat on the North of Broads.
Yeah.
And spend a bit of time
one.
There. Not on the Norfolk Broads.
Oh, I see.
No, it's it's in Orwell Quay, actually, which is in
How
Suffolk.
How is that, the boat?
That's good. It's
is
good,
it?
Yeah. And if there was a third one, I would say that, quite simply...
Drinking.
No, without sounding ridiculous, Coronation Street, which has been a...
Have you haven't watched it for months.
No, I haven't.
When was the last time you mentioned Coronation Street on Porky Vision?
Well, I don't like to because everybody watches it. It's got such a big audience.
Well, also, you're quite far behind, aren't you?
I like to bring the extraordinary to Porky Vision, not the regularity, you know what I mean? But I've been watching Coronation Street since the first ever episode.
I couldn't do that.
And I honestly...
When was the last time you watched it, though?
Last night. Really? I saw an episode last night, yeah, in between football, yeah.
Any good?
Yeah, pretty good. Yeah, I like it. Yeah, okay. I mean, it's gone very politically correct.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there are more same-sex relationships in Coronation Street than there are heterosexual relationships.
That's ridiculous.
Including a gay vicar.
Yeah.
Who became
The one that molests people?
Well, no, he's not molesting people, but he became a drug addict.
Ah.
So the gay vicar becomes a drug addict. There's a young lady there. She's still only about 22.
Right.
Who's had three gay relationships,
right,
including a woman who was her physiotherapist, which I thought was against the law.
Okay.
And all that
Why
kind
is it
of
against
stuff.
The law to have a relationship with your physiotherapist?
Well, you're not supposed to have relationships with your patients.
I saw a picture of a woman in the paper the other day who was apparently, she appears to now be a model, but was apparently the physiotherapist at Middlesbrough.
Oh, yeah?
Right? Beautiful looking girl.
Yeah.
And apparently she's now with the Australian goalkeeper.
Oh, is she?
Yeah.
Not our favourite Australian goalkeeper.
Not
Bozzo. Oh,
Bozzy. No, not Bozzy.
Yeah, my Bozzy. Listen, mate, I'm in town today and I've got a few very interesting friends here. You like to come down?
Some guns.
Exactly, and all that kind of stuff.
No, not that one.
Yeah.
No, this is the one who's actually playing in the World Cup.
That's right, yeah. You know. Unfortunately, in Coronation Street now, they attack real-life issues. So, unfortunately, they've had a suicide lately.
God.
Which, you know, wasn't
good. Not very entertaining.
Well, it's supposed to draw it out of you. They've had male rape situation, you know.
For God's sake.
I know.
It's a family show.
I know, but they want to get into reality. They've had, you know, they've had children who've had problems with their drug-addled parents and all this kind of stuff.
Oh,
you know what
blimey.
I mean? Yeah, yeah.
You sound like good fun to me. Refine says, if you could be a government minister other than prime minister, which department would you choose and why? I think I know what you're going to say about this one.
No, I. Do you know what? I would love to be the minister for defence.
That's what I thought you'd say.
Yeah, because I'd like to bolster defence in this country. I mean,
you'd also like to stand on the bridge saluting everyone, wouldn't you?
No, I'd like to stand on the bridge and tell everyone what to do.
Yeah.
You know, as I was the minister. I mean, there was a woman once. I think it's when you and I were in America, and she became head of the Conservative Party in Canada.
Oh, yeah.
And she was so arrogant. She told the Prime Minister once, who wasn't Trudeau in those days, somebody else. You know, you can't attack me anymore. I'm the defence minister and I put my tanks on your lawn.
Yeah.
That was when, in the next election, her party got wiped out because of her uselessness and arrogance.
Really?
I mean, just got wiped out.
Right.
Imagine the Labour Party or the Tory Party getting wiped out in an election.
Yeah.
That's what happened to her.
Well, UKIP didn't they?
Yeah, exactly. So you've got to be careful when you're the defence minister because you have tanks and you have planes and you have ships. But if we don't... The first duty and responsibility of a government is to defend its own people, even before a pledge to maintain a stable society.
Indeed. Here's one from Paul, going back to the World Cup. Who's been the biggest plank of the World Cup so far?
The biggest plank of the World Cup so far has been Shaqiri.
Uh-huh.
And he's the Stoke player, but he won't be a Stoke player next season because he thinks an awful lot of himself. And he wants to go. Shaqiri plays for Switzerland, but he has Albanian descent.
Oh, yes.
And in a game against Serbia, where, there, as you know better than most, actually, because you covered that war, there is terrible sort of
tension
in the Balkans and that kind of stuff.
Well, he's a Kosovan Albanian, isn't he?
I think he's Kosovan Albanian. Yeah. And what happened is, exactly, Kosovo and Serbia, when he scored a goal, he made what's called the double eagle-headed salute.
I was really surprised by that because, you know, it's actually quite a sophisticated political message to give out.
Of course,
you know, in the middle of a football match, right? And he's going to be sort of upbraided for it, isn't he?
Well, he might be banned for two games. And he wasn't the only one.
Yeah.
A teammate of his in the Swiss team as well did the same.
Yeah.
And now what they're saying is that's a political demonstration and that could see him in trouble.
Yeah,
so he's a plank. Not because I'm questioning his political beliefs or his...
but he's jeopardising his team's chances.
Yeah, his desire for his country, but he is one of the better players for Switzerland, and if he's banned for two games, he's screwed everybody up.
Well, that was one of the things that worried me on the game England played against Panama, that they were so dirty, that team. I've not seen a team that dirty, I don't think, since we saw old Rattan and his boys in the 1966 World Cup from Argentina.
Who Alf Ramsey called animals.
Yes, well, they were.
They were.
You see, I mean, I actually missed the first goal, right?
Yeah.
Because I was watching the edge of the penalty area where one of the guys had, one of the England players, in a sort of headlock.
Yeah, yeah.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah, by the way, you know that Alf Ramsey called the Argentinians animals because they pissed against the England dressing room door.
Did they?
They came out of there.
What, you mean before the game?
Yeah, they came out of their dressing room, you know, a few minutes early. And then they started pissing on England's dressing room door to wind them up. That's right, yeah.
That is not right.
They said they were disgusting people. Yeah.
I'll tell you what, we're almost at the end.
By the way, I like Argentinian people. Not all disgusting, but those players were that day in 1966.
That would be unfair.
Latam was the captain who got sent off.
That's right. Mm. Ian says, could you please make clear if Porky 1 is Welsh or not? The people of Chester say he was brought up on the Welsh side of the border, and he keeps ducking the question.
No, I was brought up in Chester. Chester is very much an English town. It's on the north side of the border of North Wales.
Yes.
I did go to school at the King's School Chester, whose claim to fame is that the border between England and Wales runs right through the middle of the playing field.
Yes.
So we did occasionally play in Wales. But the school is a distinguished school of English and Welsh aristocracy. For instance, Michael Owen's children go to the King's School Chester, and the late, great and sadly departed Gary Speed, his children went to the King's School Chester. He, of course, was manager of Wales and captain of Wales before that. And it is a, I would say, it's a dual nationality region.
Mm. And then one final question from John.
Yes.
Slightly continuing with the drinking theme. Mm. How many pints a day do you recommend as part of a calorie-controlled diet?
No more than two.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.